Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Everyone, welcome to The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where a guest and I talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Now, before we get started, I just want to ask you guys to review, subscribe, rate, all that fun stuff. Here is a comment and a review that we got recently. This is from Cortez Jamerson. Okay. And they say, a hidden gem, 5 stars. As someone who loves histories and stories that not many people may know about, this is one of the best podcasts I've heard in a while. It's a history lesson without the typical dryness that comes with listening about history. The host is wonderful. Thank you, Jamerson. And has a great voice and wonderful storytelling ability. I always look forward to the next episode. And if you haven't listened yet, what are you waiting for? Seriously, ask yourself, what are you waiting for? I added that last part. Thank you so much. It really means a lot and it helps us do more of these. So today we're doing the Waco Siege and David Koresh. I must admit that I really didn't remember much about this tragedy except for those images that you're probably thinking of a compound and a fire and the news stations all huddled up and trying to get footage of this. I didn't really understand what was going on. And now that I've learned more about it, wow, is it crazy? Let's get started. Here's what you need to know about the Waco Siege and David Koresh. The Waco Siege was the siege of a compound belonging to the religious sect Branch Davidians. It was carried out by American federal and Texas state law enforcement, as well as the U.S. military, between February 28th and April 19th, 1993. The Branch Davidians were led by David Koresh and were headquartered at Mount Carmel Center Ranch, 13 miles northeast of Waco. Suspecting the group of stockpiling illegal weapons, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, ATF, obtained a search warrant for the compound and arrest warrants for Koresh and a select few of the group's members. The incident began when the ATF attempted to raid the ranch. An intense gun battle erupted, resulting in the deaths of 4 government agents and 6 Branch Davidians. Upon the ATF's failure to raid the compound, a siege lasting 51 days was initiated by the FBI. Eventually, the FBI launched an assault and initiated a tear gas attack in an attempt to force the Branch Davidians out of the ranch. During the attack, a fire engulfed Mount Carmel Center in circumstances that are still disputed. This resulted in the deaths of 76 Branch Davidians, including David Koresh. 21 of the victims were children under the age of 16. David Koresh was born Vernon Wayne Howell on August 17, 1959. He joined the Branch Davidians at age 22 and became their spiritual leader. David believed he had the gift of prophecy and, among other things, saw himself as divinely ordained to live out the depiction of the end of the world in the Book of Revelations. Fun facts, aka death stats. Koresh is the biblical name of Cyrus the Great, a Persian king who was named a Messiah for freeing Jews during the Babylonian captivity. His first name, David, symbolized a lineage directly to the biblical king David, for whom the new Messiah would descend. By taking the name of David Koresh, he was professing himself to be the spiritual descendant of King David, a messianic figure carrying out a divinely commissioned errand. Koresh played guitar and sang in services at Mount Carmel Center. His band played a few times at clubs in Waco, and former members, such as David Thibodeau, have written that he recruited them through music. At the time of the initial raid, 123 people, including 43 children, were inside the multi-story building where Koresh lived with followers. Of those 123, only 41 survived. Koresh was found with a bullet to the head next to his right-hand man, Steve Schneider. No one knows whether he killed himself or if he was shot by Schneider. According to the FBI, Steve Schneider, quote, probably realized he was dealing with a fraud, shot and killed Koresh, and then committed suicide with the same gun. Only 9 of the Branch Davidians escaped the fire. Pathology studies concluded that at least 20 Branch Davidians, including Koresh, were shot in the head or mouth, and one, a 3-year-old boy, had been stabbed in the chest. The FBI claims not to have fired any shots that day. Wow. That is a very intense breakdown of one of history's worst tragedies. To help me today figure out who's to blame, I have guest of honor, Matt Gorley.
One of history's best tragedies.
They keep calling them great tragedies, which I have a serious problem with that.
I was referring to myself as one of history's best tragedies.
Oh.
I am so excited to be here. A, it's lovely to be a podcast guest in my own home. And B, I love this podcast. And I it's been so long since I've talked about this subject that I love it too. So I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, thank you. We're so excited to have you on as a guest and as a listener.
It's weird to do this in this context too, because we're friends and we're here with my wife. And normally when the three of us are together, there's cocktails.
Oh, yeah. Guys, we have so much fun.
I know.
We really do.
There's usually a nice meal that Amanda's cooked.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a potluck. But I also have to give a special shout out to Matt, because he helped us sound design the wonderful intro that you all hear on every episode of The Alarmist. Oh.
That's true. And I get so many compliments on that intro.
Well, like I said, I'm a big fan of this podcast and I'm not surprised it's doing so well. Aww. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And so now I thought you'd be the perfect guest because I know for this particular tragedy, because I know that you actually have something of David Koresh.
It happened by accident, but I have it here right now in my lap.
Please tell us the story.
It is a 1978 Ibanez Musician electric guitar. And it's just, I was looking for a good vintage guitar, and this must have been, oh my God, like 16, 17 years ago? That long ago? Early 2000s. And I went to this store to look at it, and I, knowing me, I was like, I just like the way it looks. I wasn't so much of a musician that I cared about the way it sounded, because it's this like dark natural wood guitar with a lighter wood stripe down the middle.
And that's nothing you would ever choose?
No, it is.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a very good looking. I chose it because I liked the way it looked.
Yeah.
It's probably not even that great of a playing guitar. But then after I bought it, they said we weren't going to tell anybody until after it was sold, but that guitar was owned by David Koresh, the Waco, Texas cult leader. So there's no proof of it, but he gave me the case, and the case has like his David Koresh written on it. And he said the story was that before David Koresh left for Texas from San Francisco, he left this behind and his roommate sold it to the store.
Oh, you can my God.
Feel how heavy it is.
Oh my God. It's very heavy, guys. It's heavier than like a 4-year-old or something.
And I swear, like, you know me, I'm no superstitious guy, but man, this thing breaks a string or the strap falls off every time I play it. You know?
It's got bad karma.
Yeah.
As it should.
Yeah.
Well, it must have been when he went to, I know that there was a period of time in his life that he came to Hollywood in California to try and be a rock star.
As they all do, man.
I know.
And I have a CD of his songs.
No.
Yeah. And he's not bad. He's no Manson. Like, Manson was shit.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy's got something.
He's got some chops. Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, there's so much to talk about because, you know, he was, he played in the cult, I guess, at services.
Not the band The Cult, but the actual cult. That's how hardcore this guy was.
And we'll get into it, but there's this part of the story that is really creepy where he's singing, and I won't talk about it yet, but so let's get started on this very sad tragedy, and the way I want to kind of do this, you know, is by maybe getting to know the cult a little bit.
The Branch Davidians.
Or where they came from, how it all started. So the Davidians are a splinter branch of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And I just want to know.
What a splinter.
Yeah. Wow. They're not Seventh-day Adventists.
Right.
So that, I think that's an important distinction. I actually, one of my best friends growing up was Seventh-day Adventist.
Yeah, that's a fairly common church, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all over LA. They're not as popular in Miami, but I mean, she went to a Seventh-day Adventist school.
Oh.
So they're, you know, they're on the up and up.
I think they're the ones that I always rub me the wrong way, not for any reason you'd think, but because their sign their logo is a cross that has poor perspective. It's drawn in poor perspective and it drives my visual mind crazy every time I see it. So that's my beef with you, Seventh-day Adventists.
They should have gotten a better, I don't know, graphic designer.
Yeah, or something.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Seventh-day Adventists have been since before computers. I don't think graphic designing was a job.
Sure it was. Yeah, all the way back to any time anyone had to do a logo. That was,
I mean,
yeah.
Jesus had a great graphic designer, right?
He was a carpenter
himself. It was a simple cross.
Yeah. Right.
Just a simple cross.
Yeah.
The statue of him dying on it came much afterward.
Yeah, I don't think he had that commissioned while he was up there. Like, real quick.
That wasn't approved. But, okay, so the Davidians are a splinter branch. And they're founded in 1929 by Victor Hutef.
Wow.
Now, I'm definitely saying that incorrectly. Matt, it's spelled H-O-U-T-E-F-F.
Sounds right to me.
Hootef.
Hootef. I didn't realize they were that old. And I've read like a whole, I one time read a whole book on this thing and I've forgotten all of it. So this is still news to me.
Well, if you got, you're out there and you're interested in this, there's a great documentary on Amazon Prime right now. I don't know. Just put in Waco Siege and it'll come up.
I think we may have watched that.
Did we?
It's a two-parter. Yeah. Really good. Really, really good. Huh. So this guy, Hootef, he's a traveling salesman and a Sabbath school teacher from Los Angeles.
Interesting. Because like Pentecostalism, you think of as this deep South church, but that all comes from LA too. And Scientology.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
LA and California have a more of a religious contribution to society than one might think.
Yeah, hotbed of cults. Fertile breeding ground.
So this guy produces a 172-page manuscript entitled The Shepherd's Rod that called for denominational reform and reinterpretation of the Seventh-day Adventist eschatology. Great word, right?
Wow, yeah.
It means the end of times.
Good, how nice.
So, okay, Hootef's death is 1955, and another group breaks away to form the Branch Davidians. And
wait, was he a Branch Davidian or was he a Seventh-day Adventist?
A Davidian. So there's Seventh-day Adventists. Okay. Then there's the Davidians, and then there's Branch Davidians.
Whoa, okay.
Okay. And the name's alluding to the anointed branch mentioned in Zechariah.
Oh, yeah. I love Zechariah.
Zechariah 3:8 and 6:12.
Tell me. Don't get me started. I'll do it for word for word.
Well, apparently David Koresh could.
I bet he could.
He memorized the Bible top to bottom.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah. So Hootef had... Okay. So he had founded the Davidians based on the prophecy of imminent apocalypse, as they usually do. And it involves the second coming of Jesus and the defeat of the evil armies of Babylon.
As they usually do.
And he moves this group to a church at a hilltop several miles east of Waco, Texas. And they name it Mount Carmel. After a mountain in Israel mentioned in the Bible's Old Testament. So 1959, then. The widow of Victor Hootef, Florence Hootef, announces that the expected Armageddon is about to take place. And members are told to gather at the center to await this event. Many built houses, they have trucks, tents, buses. Most sold their possessions. Nothing happens. Following the failure of this prophecy, control of Mount Carmel fell to Benjamin Rodin. And he's the founder. He's the one who founded the Branch Davidians.
Okay.
So he, you know, he's got his own run and his version. And then he dies. After he dies, control falls to his wife, Lois Rodin. And you're like, why is this important? Why do I need to know
all this?
Is
that the woman he married?
Okay. Oh,
yeah. I remember this. Gets good.
So
like,
this gets real good,
this
guys.
This is like cable TV show level, like premium cable TV show level drama.
I think Paramount just did a show about this.
Really?
Paramount Network, you know, the streaming service.
They didn't call for my guitar.
That's rude. So Lois Rodin, they have a son, and his name is George Rodin. But Lois thinks he's unfit to resume the position of prophet.
Oh.
Instead, she grooms Vernon Howell, who we all know is David Koresh, and she says he's the chosen successor.
But really, they're getting it on, right? Isn't that what's going on?
That's the thing. So they're actual lovers.
And she's quite a bit older,
she's
right?
In her 60s.
And he's in
I believe he's 22.
Yeah.
Something something steamy like that.
I love that.
What'd you say?
I love it.
Well, now I forgot to write this down, but she claims that she's gotten pregnant. That she gets pregnant in her 60s to David. And that, you know, she's carrying the Lamb of God. It's no one knows if she was actually pregnant.
I do. She wasn't.
Okay.
I mean, we all do.
You knew, you had her pregnancy test?
No, we all know.
Yeah. It's unlikely.
Cult people are liars. And
I mean,
it's very
science
unlikely.
Science is not on her side.
No.
Let's just say that. So Lois has a miscarriage, supposedly.
Uh-huh.
And then David says, well, she must not be the chosen one. I am the chosen one.
Ooh, man. He takes it from her.
He's trying to gain control of the group, but he's got this George Roden guy, you know, because she passes away. That's what happens. She passes away. George Roden's like, well, I'm gonna be it. And David's like, no, it's my thing. And George, who's actually kind of mentally unstable, apparently he dug up a body. They dug up like a 20-year-old body.
Uh-huh.
And tried to get it to, I'm unsure what they did with this body, but essentially it's illegal to do that. You can't dig up bodies.
Shoot.
And David alerts authorities and he's like, yo, this guy is digging up bodies. And the authorities are like, well, we don't have any evidence. And David's like, I'm going to get you some evidence. So he goes to the compound with a few of his guys. And of course, guns, because George is known to carry guns as well. And, you know, George catches them. A gunfight happens. And George gets shot. And
David shoots him, right?
David shoots him. Yeah. And they later on go to trial. And David is acquitted because once they put George up on the stand, the jury was like, oh, that guy's crazy.
I got a little information about this. So apparently they dug up the corpse because they were having a contest to see which man was spiritually superior and who could raise the dead.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
So that was the contest.
So, okay. So that's the background on what's going on with these Branch Davidians.
Okay.
And let's specify the tragedy that we are figuring out who's to blame is this actual Waco siege where the 76 people died and plus the six Branch Davidians in the first raid and the four FBI agents. So this is like, this is what we're really trying to figure out who we can blame, who feels good.
Right. It's worth noting that after that shooting, I think that's when he goes to San Francisco and then gets this guitar and then leaves it.
Really?
And then comes back to Texas, I believe.
Well, I have so many questions about the guitar, though.
So do I.
Why didn't he bring it with him?
That's a good question. Waco. Maybe it was one of those leave your possessions behind, or who knows how he had to get out of there. Maybe he had more.
Maybe he needed money. Maybe he pawned it.
Maybe it's not even David Koresh's guitar.
So, off the bat, I feel great about putting David Koresh up there.
For blame?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and I can go on with more backstory because it's fascinating.
Yeah.
So Koresh comes from a dysfunctional family, and his mother was 14 years old when she had him.
That's right. Oh, my God. Yeah.
He never knew his father, who broke up with his mother before she gave birth. And eventually he's raised by his grandmother, who is the one who takes him to the Seventh Day Adventist Church. Mm. So as a teenager, Koresh struggles with dyslexia and was placed in special education classes. And of course, he was considered awkward, unpopular, and was bullied at school. And so he drops out of school before his senior year of high school. And in his 20s, he focuses on the church. That's his whole thing, the Bible. This is when he learns the Bible and he memorizes it. And he's later thrown out of his grandmother's evangelical church after pursuing the pastor's teenage daughter and saying that God had ordered him to marry her.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So this is setting up what's going to continue to be a pattern.
Yeah. It's worth mentioning that he's not a bad looking guy.
No. Except for the big glasses.
Yeah. But I mean, if you take the period with... which this happened.
Yeah.
But when you hear him sing, he's kind of like you know, Jeff Buckley, he's kind of like this like chanteuse or something. It's really eerie and ethereal and kind of beautiful in a gross way.
Yeah. And it's very Christian. All of his music is very Christian, right? Yeah. But like Christian rock?
It is. But not like you, when you think like Christian rock, you think like Jars of Clay. It's not like that. Yeah. It's more like almost like cool 70s prog rock.
Yeah.
Or like cutting edge indie 80s stuff.
Which is such a shame, because if he had just channeled his potential into this like Christian rock band.
Yeah, I know.
He could have been good.
He could have been taking over the industry of Christian rock. He could have been Jars of Clay. He could have been a clay jar.
There's an industry for this in the 90s, especially in the 90s.
Jars of Clay.
So David Koresh moves to Waco and joins the Branch Davidians. And in 1983, that's when he begins claiming this gift of prophecy. And it's speculated by David Thibodeau in his 1999 book, who we know is the guy who he recruited through music. He wrote this book that he had a sexual relationship with Lois Roden. So it's confirmed from Thibodeau. Roden's the widow in her 60s. And in 1984, so he's already joined the Branch Davidians, Koresh marries Rachel Jones when she's 14 and he's 24.
Wow.
This is apparently legal under Texas law.
Sure it is.
And her parents gave her permission.
And because it's Texas.
Yeah. But Koresh was alleged to be in multiple... he's alleged to be involved in multiple incidents of sexual abuse, as we now know. Koresh's doctrine of the House of David did lead to quote-unquote marriages with both married and single women in the group. And it was purportedly included at least one underage girl. So what he would do was, he's like, okay, so there would be couples within the group, and he'd say, now all of your marriages are annulled, and sex is not to be for pleasure. It's only for procreation, and therefore you only want me or procreate with me so that your child comes from me, chosen one.
And the husbands mostly went for it.
It's just a lot of gross stuff when you kind of...
Yeah. Also, when you like couple it with the fact that he would do these, I believe, like nightly services, and he had his whole flock there, and he would just basically play these never-ending songs.
Yes.
It was like, you know, like the worst type of hostage to be held is someone with a guitar. And I say that as a guitar player. Like, I hate when people do that. And he would do that, and just think like how manipulated those people had to have been to A, put up with giving their wives away, but really to sit there and listen to that shit.
Yeah. And they said that these services would like, you'd go and you wouldn't know when it would end.
Yeah. And you can't just leave early.
No. And you couldn't pee.
No.
You had to like just pee on yourself if you had to go.
Man, he's just a raging narcissist.
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Koresh is a really bad, abusive guy, and I just feel great putting him up on the board. One of the details that I learned that was really disturbing is when the siege started happening. So he has these 43 kids, but not all of them are his. So when the siege starts, he lets out some of the kids go two by two.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very biblical.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I hadn't even thought of that. But he keeps the ones that are fathered by him.
Wow.
So all of the kids that he fathered died in the fire.
That's ironic.
And terrible.
Yeah.
Let's move on to like other people. Let's talk about the FBI and the ATF. It was a very complicated situation with those two agencies. Now it was the ATF who rented a house across the street and set up a group of agents to closely monitor the complex. So they're on to them.
Oh, wow.
And the reason they're on to them is because they were alerted by a delivery guy who was delivering a package that was damaged and saw multiple guns and ammunition inside of it, and was like, why would a religious organization be buying so many guns?
Today, you don't even ask that question. like, oh, it's a religious organization.
Well, and also it's Texas. But I think the amount, they were literally stockpiling guns. So they have concerns that they're possessing illegal firearm material and possibly converting AR-15 semi-automatic rifles into machine guns. And they decide that they're going to raid. Bad raid. So, bad idea, bad raid. I want to talk about this FBI agent, Robert Rodriguez. So, he's one of the guys, the ATF people, who are living across the street. And he gets told that he's got to be an undercover agent. And apparently, he goes in and David is not sold. He's kind of like onto him, but he is so, I don't know, what's the word? Cocky.
Uh-huh.
That he thinks he can convert him.
Right, that's right.
So yeah, he kind of like amazing. Takes him in.
God.
So Robert Rodriguez went in undercover as a cult member?
As a just like a person who was interested. He said, let's see, he posed as a trade school student named Robert Garcia. Big change. And it said here that he visits the compound 8 times in the months before the raid and listened to Koresh's endless preaching more than any other outsider and came to know the sect leader's theology. So he actually goes in for, you know, a while. Then this is what happens. They're all deciding to do this raid. And they're like, it has to be perfect. We have to catch them by surprise. Element of surprise was huge because they knew that there were so many guns inside.
Right.
And they decide on a date and they send Robert Rodriguez the morning of to go and kind of just want to talk to David more about the Bible, blah, blah, blah. The ATF is so annoying that they alert the media that there's going to be this raid. I it's unclear to me why they told the news that this was happening.
It wasn't a leak. They did it on purpose.
I'm looking it up.
But Amanda's on it. So there's this lost news truck. And the morning, the truck gets lost, stops a postal worker for directions to the compound, and they tell the postal worker that they're going to cover an ATF raid. But what they don't realize is that the postal worker is a member of the Branch Davidians.
Like crazy. You wouldn't believe it in a movie.
No.
Yeah.
And he's a member. He runs back and he alerts the David Koresh and the people. When the postal worker comes back, Robert Rodriguez is sitting in the house. And apparently, he says that Koresh leaves the room, and then when he comes back, he knows something is different, and he starts getting really nervous, as you and I probably would. And he comes in and he says, he turns to him, and this is a quote: "They're coming, Robert. The time has come." I knew, and then Robert says, "I knew for sure that he knew." And that meant a federal raid would fulfill the self-styled Messiah's vision of Armageddon. So he knows it's coming. And the agent flees the compound only an hour before the raid takes place to warn his superiors that they're walking into an ambush. So then the way he tells is that he gets up and he turns to leave. And he's sure that they're going to shoot him, you know, when he turns around. But he doesn't. They let him go for some reason. So first, let's put the lost news truck up on the board.
And I have an update here about why the ATF would tell the media. So it was a leak. The Texas Rangers, I'm reading off of salon.com. Media and law enforcement officials say journalists were tipped off by Cal Ludke, L-U-E-D-K-E, a longtime member of McLennan County Sheriff's Office, who was assigned to support the ATF's raid preparation. And Ludke vehemently denies the charge, but Dan Mullaney, a former cameraman, told Salon that he learned about the raid from Tommy Witherspoon, a reporter, and Tommy said he got it from Ludke.
Okay, well, we're putting Ludke up on
Ludke,
the door.
Okay.
Yeah. So, on the board. Yeah. I said the door.
I had a teacher named Ludke.
You did? Really? Well, I hope it wasn't the same guy.
Might
okay,
have
so.
Might have been.
So we're saying Cal Ludke because he tipped off the media.
Yes.
And then are we also putting the...
The truck. The news truck.
Let me look up. Let's see if I can get a specific name on that.
Robert Rodriguez. I mean, we could also put Robert Rodriguez because he is the one who's in charge of telling his superiors. And I read somewhere that he's got to tell his commander, Chuck Sarabin. He says they know, Chuck, they know. And he reportedly said it in a highly agitated voice. They know we're coming. But Sarabin and another senior agency official, Philip Chojnacki, testify later warning that the warning was too vague to call off the raid.
What?
Mr. Koresh always thought that the government was coming to get him, they said, and we didn't know if he meant in the physical sense or in the metaphysical sense on that day.
Oh, but that's enough to pause.
Come yeah. on, Sarabin. So yeah. I think we
should... Sarabin on the board.
Put Sarabin up on the board.
Yeah.
Okay. And how do you spell that?
It's spelled Sarabyn.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so let's continue talking about the FBI.
Okay. I'm in.
So, the FBI on the morning of February 28th sends, it's 9 a.m. They wanted to do it the day on Sunday because they thought they would be at church,
right,
or that the men would be separated from the women. So they send an 80-vehicle convoy, including two cattle trailers pulled by trucks and loaded with 76 heavily armed agents. 76, that's as many people as eventually died.
Yeah.
And they raced up to the property and halted in front as the agents stormed the center. Overhead, two Black Hawk helicopters arrived almost simultaneously, and that's when the shootout occurs. So this shootout occurs. Six of the Davidians die. Four of the agents. It's a very sad day. Eventually, they're saying, like, what do you call it? Ceasefire. They're trying to do a ceasefire, yeah. But then it'll stop, and then the other side will start again.
And so, there's news footage of this. Like, you can see a guy up on a roof get shot in the leg or something, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's actually news footage of people being carried off because they didn't think of a backup plan.
Yeah.
The FBI didn't have a backup plan, like, if it could go wrong, if it were to go wrong.
Right.
So something like the police weren't coming, the ambulances weren't there to help.
Yeah.
And they had so many people that were injured as well. It's 'cause it was like 4 people died, but I want to say it was more than 20 people were injured, maybe even more than that. This then goes on for 51 days. So they're like trying to get people out, and the FBI really thinks that they're just going to give in. They get this like negotiator.
Yeah, they're talking on the phone a lot, right?
Yeah. Something that the FBI starts doing is psychological warfare. And they start shining. It's taking longer. And they're like, we got to get them out. They start shining a spotlight into the house all night to mess with their sleep pattern.
And blasting music or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
They play audio of rabbits being slaughtered.
Oh, my God.
And Nancy Sinatra's These Boots Are Made for Walking.
Why that?
I don't know. I guess because it's like, you know, these boots are made for walking. Like, get out.
Maybe. Oh, my God. What? I wonder if it had anything to do with, like, the repetitious bass line of doom, doom, doom.
Oh,
doom,
good
doom,
question. Doom, doom,
doom. Like, would that start to drive you crazy after a while? I wonder if there's any science or something.
And this is what I was talking about earlier, which in response, when they would play that music, he would then just play his blast his music back.
His own music?
His own music he would play.
Oh, I got to hand it to him for that. I mean, man. What a narcissist.
I do believe, so music torture is a real thing. And there are song lists that they actually, people use to torture people. And Sinatra's These Boots Are Made for Walking is on that list.
You know what, but another one is Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time.
Okay, so here's a list of songs that are used to torture.
What if you wrote a song that got like put on the list?
Well, honestly, I'm taking a look at this. This looks like my workout playlist.
Yeah, torture.
So there's The Real Slim Shady by Eminem.
Yeah, wow. Okay, I see that.
That's a new one because that wouldn't have been there for David Koresh.
No. None of these,
They'd all
think
be alive
enough.
If that song existed.
Dirty by Christina Aguilera.
Oh,
Take
God.
Your Best Shot by Dope.
Nope.
Take Your
I don't know what that one is. Babylon by David Gray.
Wait, can you read
that?
Oh, yeah.
Babylon.
The Barney theme. I love you, the Barney theme.
Oh, that could do it.
A Saturday Night Fever by the Bee Gees.
No, what? Give that to me over and over again.
The Meow Mix theme.
Yeah.
The Beautiful People by
Meow. Meow, 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 meow,
meow. The Beautiful People by Marilyn Manson.
Yeah.
We Are the Champions by Queen is the last one on
that would
list.
Be inspirational.
I wonder if it is a kind of repetition thing. And it all goes towards sleep deprivation, which is supposedly the most effective type of way to get someone to talk or relent.
Right.
Not pain.
I'll just chime in with a quick update about the news truck that was partially to blame. That's on our board right now. So it was a cameraman, Jim Peeler. And the news truck was for KWTX-TV. And actually, the ATF, a few of the agents filed a civil suit against KWTX, the Waco Tribune Herald, and the Waco Ambulance Company, claiming that their employees were responsible for tipping off the Davidians. And I believe that they settled out of court.
On the board. On the board.
Okay, so we're going to put, I'm just going to put the media.
Sure, and we'll know who that guy is.
Oh, right. Okay. You blame all the media.
Yeah. No, I think we should put KTXP Waco, whatever it is.
Okay, they're on the board in the same area as the news truck.
Perfect. Yeah, that those are the ones we want to blame. So how about that? They also turned off the electricity and the plumbing, perhaps?
Right. But they had all kinds of stockpiled food and provisions, right?
They did. They had food, but they had to like poop in buckets or something. Yeah. So this siege actually goes on for 51 days. Ooh. 51 days until April 19, 1993. And that's when Janet Reno, Attorney General Janet Reno, approves recommendations of FBI officials to proceed with a final advance in which the Branch Davidians were to be removed from their building by force. And in an attempt to flush Koresh from the stronghold, the FBI resorted to pumping CS gas from a M728 combat engineer vehicle with a battering ram on into the compound. And they do this for 6 hours. But So these vehicles are like almost like, I don't know. You probably see them in a construction site. They look like they have like a scorpion tail, but it's in the front.
Yeah,
and they just start literally breaking the building.
Yeah,
and putting tear gas.
Yeah,
inside.
So my question is, at what point they knew that there were children in there? Was there ever talk of just stopping and going back and reassessing? And
or like, why not just wait them out? Because they have unlimited resources on the outside, but they have to have a finite amount of resources on the inside.
That's a good question. So the big thing that people have written about and why it's so controversial is that there were... ATF was seeking a budget renewal at the time, and they saw the sect as a nice target for a decisive kind of show.
Oh. They wanted a win, and they wanted
a flashy win, and that's probably why they tipped off the news.
On the board.
On the board.
So what's that, the ATVs? Just
the ATF. ATF.
Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
And Janet Reno.
Yeah.
Now... Janet Reno, all I know about Janet Reno is she's from Miami.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And she has peacocks.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
There's someone I went to high school with who lived in the same neighborhood as her. And what they would say is that she had peacocks that would escape the backyard or something.
Oh, my God. Sometimes we have peacocks in this neighborhood and you hear them calling from far away and it's haunting. They go like, oh, oh.
Like a... A yawn, like a mad yawn.
Yeah, like a crazy yawn. Yeah.
So this goes on for 6 hours. They're freaking throwing tear gas in there. And then around noon, fire breaks out in multiple locations in the building.
Because of the tear gas, right?
This is the thing that we'll never know.
Oh, man.
The agents say that the sect... started the blaze, and then the survivors blamed the government for igniting the inferno. There's a guy who talks about it in the documentary that says that he's one of the guys who runs out. He was a Branch Davidian, and he ran out, and he said he heard someone pouring gasoline. They, eventually find no one makes it out alive other than those 9 people who happen to run out, and... Also, there's a woman who runs out with a disc, I don't know if it's a floppy disc, probably a floppy disc, that has like one of the 7, what are they called? It was the 7,
deadly sins?
No.
C's. 7
C's. It's not a 7 rod. It's not a rod.
A 6 track?
No. He called it. It was like
an A-track?
Yeah. It's a biblical a thing.
A 6-pack.
A 7 seal?
A 6-pack. 7th seal.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
He had written the first seal.
Oh, good for him.
And that's why he was...
nice of him to do.
That's why he was putting off the siege. He wanted to finish.
I see.
His 7 seals. He only got 1 done. But he kills these children, these followers, but he sends a woman out with this floppy disk. I mean, what do we have up there right now?
So at the moment, we have David Koresh, Cal Ludke, and Cal was the guy who maybe tipped off the media. The news truck and KWTX and cameraman Jim Peeler, Sarabin, and ATF.
Good. I mean, that's a hefty board, but before, and we have Janet Reno.
Oh, I'm adding her now. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the buck stops with the Attorney General, right? I mean, she's running the show.
So we got
at least
put
as far as a blame option goes.
Yeah. It's good to have that Janet Reno option.
It is, you know, name recognition.
The Janet Reno and her peacocks. Her obsession with peacocks.
Yeah, I love that. Only why would anyone have that in their backyard as an animal of choice? I mean, they're beautiful.
Yeah, they are. But they're as annoying as they are beautiful.
Yeah. So I think we have a good amount, but there's a few things that I want to talk about with you, and you tell me what you think.
Okay.
I think the followers have to go up on the board.
There is culpability to willing ignorance, you know, or what is that phrase? Why can't I think of it?
Willful ignorance.
Willful ignorance.
Yeah. Because at a certain point, you're not 100% a victim. You're kind of you're signing up for this. You know better, but you talk yourself out of it or something. I think that's what all cult victims do. I don't know. I it's hard. I want to be an empathetic person, but sometimes for cult victims, they play a part in it. And it's like, doesn't excuse what the cult leader does. Obviously, that's horrible, but yeah, maybe that's harsh. I don't know.
Well, I know, but shouldn't we all kind of hold ourselves, like, always be questioning?
Yeah. Like, if you're in a group of people and there's girls as young as 12 or 14 having forced sex, essentially, you can't justify that, no matter what you think your religion is and stuff like that. And so you are to blame, I think. You're complicit, at least. Yeah. Accessory.
It's just that's an obvious one.
Right.
That's just like an easy out.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy's giving you all of these easy outs, like the Bible and the improving yourself. Okay, fine. If you want to drink the Kool-Aid, another.
we'll get to that next week.
Fine, but when you're seeing these girls and you're seeing abuse and you're seeing like people dying and you're like, okay.
And a guy's putting on a night-long song.
That's where you draw.
Oh, I mean, that's where I begin. The other stuff goes without saying. But that one, that's egregious.
and these are parents, too. These are parents who are willingly saying, like, let's put my kid through this. Literally offering their children.
Yeah, there's some blame there.
Yeah, so do you want me to add the cult members?
Cult members. The ones
also,
that are parents.
Yeah. Well, even the ones that aren't, they're they're fueling, no pun intended, his fire. You know, they're building his ego. They're feeding his ego. And he's getting all positive feedback, which is making him more and more narcissistic. That's the thing, I think, with those type of people is you got to kind of draw the line.
Yeah. You got to set a boundary.
Reading here on the DallasNews.com, there's a whole timeline of what everything that went down. And apparently on the day where the fire began, the FBI, who had bugged the compound, heard the Davidians discussing spreading fuel on Koresh's order.
Ew.
Oh. So I don't know if that's footage that exists or if that's just what they say they heard or what, but this is according to this article I'm reading, it seems like the Davidians are the ones fueling the fire. Because did they believe that after they died they were coming back to life? Was that kind of their belief system?
They believed that they would all meet again. It wasn't so much that they were going to come back to life. That's another cult.
That's the Hellbop, the Heaven's Gate. Is that?
I think they just like believed in heaven, that this was just the end was coming anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So the parents are up on the board. The followers are up on the board.
Are you guys ready to transition into picking someone to blame?
Yeah, I mean, we're close. I want to bring up another thing.
Okay.
Wow.
And then, well, before, I'll bring it up. And then if you have any others, you can bring them up.
Okay.
Good plan. Can we blame the Bible?
Ooh. This is a big question, right?
I mean.
Wow.
I have some thoughts, but I want to hear yours.
Oh, my God. I mean, yeah. And separately, can you blame religion?
Sure.
Okay, there you go. I agree.
I mean, here's my thought. Without the Bible, there's no ammo, right? He's got no followers. He's got nothing to go on. And without the stories, he can't lay claim on being Christ.
I guess so. But would he have found another thing like Manson didn't really go
right?
With
he had
Bible.
The Beatles or something?
Yeah, Helter Skelter and the race war. But it was just like, was his narcissism just all it needed was a vessel? So is the Bible David Koresh's closest thing and the thing he always understood? Was he always going to do this in some way? I wonder.
That's a fair point, which is actually making me think that maybe we don't blame the Bible.
Yeah, in a way, and I can't believe I'm saying this.
I know.
Maybe don't blame the Bible. But religion, that's another thing, because a wise person once said something to the effect of, like, the only difference between Christianity and a cult is 100 years. It's just been in our psyche for as long as, you know, civilization has been along. So nobody looks at it as a cult because it's always been there. But it's the same tenets and principles of you're being asked to believe this thing, to follow people every week. It's not that far off. Obviously, this is way extreme, the Branch Davidians,
right.
But it really is just the most successful, biggest, oldest cult there ever was.
True.
I guess.
I mean, I don't know about true, if it's a cult. I think I can only speak for, like, Catholicism, because yeah. I grew up Catholic.
And I'll speak for evangelical Christianity,
right.
Because it's in my family, yeah.
I think, you know, they've done some terrible things in the past, and they're still working on some kinks, let's be honest.
Yeah, they sure are.
But they're improving,
yeah,
in a sense.
Definitely.
I guess these cults, if you gave them, I don't know, 2,000 years, maybe they'd work out the kinks as well.
I know, yeah, because some of that Old Testament shit is just as cataclysmic and violent.
I mean, he got all his ideas from the Bible.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a tough one because, you know, everybody's like always shitting on Scientology. And believe me, I'm not defending Scientology, and it's got some crazy stuff. But when you look at it, it's no crazier than Christianity. It's just, again, we're used to Christianity.
Yeah, but here, now that I of course, I'm the one who brings it up, and now I'm...
Yeah, you got to work through it.
It's the same thing as, like, blaming video games.
Yeah.
For... violence, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We can't... The Bible is a book. We can't... I mean, it's a very powerful book, obviously. And very popular.
Yeah, and big and long.
And big and long and dense.
Yes.
I mean, there's just numbers. There's a chapter just numbers, yeah. Of numbers. You know, I just don't think it's fair.
Yeah, I'm probably with you, too.
We are capable human beings.
You got to take personal responsibility, right?
Yeah.
And some, yeah, listen to us. You sound like a couple of real Republicans.
Do we?
Personal, pick you up by your own bootstraps. No, but I'm just kidding. But
well,
I agree with you.
Yeah, but in a sense, and also you, there's a sense of community. You have to care for others.
Yeah.
And be aware if someone is doing a dangerous thing, like, you have to be the alarmist.
That's right. Oh, God, good point. And Koresh is not a Jesus-like figure in that he thinks he is, and he's certainly acting like it. But Jesus wasn't going around taking other men's wives and stockpiling guns.
No!
And, I mean, it was clear that Koresh is 100% narcissistic. Yeah, I mean, we probably know where I'm falling on this.
Yeah. Well, we're not putting Bible up on the board.
Okay. Religion?
No, I don't think we can put religion. Mm. Right?
I mean, I'm always for blaming religion, but in this case, I think it's more in line with the Bible. It's down to personal responsibility.
Yeah.
So I'm going to hand over the board now.
Oh, wow.
And the board is a yellow legal pad today.
The board has evolved.
Normally a whiteboard?
Yeah. Yeah, we normally have a whiteboard, but we haven't had it the last couple of times.
Nice.
Just for our listeners, we have David Koresh, Cal Lutke, who is the...
Cal Lutke is the leak.
Oh, the leak.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy
media
who
leak or the
media leak.
Okay. The guy who told the media
at the station.
It's crazy that someone in the ATF or FBI still had to leak to the media and they don't know who that is.
Well, I mean, if you remember the thing about the them needing a budget.
Right.
It kind of makes sneaky sense, right? What's the best way to get word out about how awesome your...
Boy, that backfired.
Or did it, though?
I don't know. Did they get their budget funding?
I think they did.
Oh, my God.
I mean...
Jeez.
And they did a pretty good job of, blaming David Koresh. We all know him.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, so we have Cal Ludke, the news truck that got lost, camera guy Jim Pecker with KWTX TV.
I think it's Peeler.
Oh, Pecker. Peeler. Yeah, okay, now I see it. I'm reading Amanda's handwriting.
Yeah.
Okay. There's Sarabin, who's the FBI chief that Robert Rodriguez tells, and he's like, go on with it.
Yeah.
ATF itself, Janet Reno, and cult members. Now, look at this board, Matt, and tell me how you think we're going to cross a single thing off of it, because I'm having a really hard time.
Are you? Yeah. I mean, I got a strong number one, but I'd be hard-pressed to pick
well,
a number
let's
two.
Cross out.
Oh, we gotta eliminate.
Let's eliminate. Process
Ooh,
of elimination.
Boy. Okay.
Who goes out first? The news truck?
I think so because it was stupid.
Right.
But I don't think it was malicious, and I think it was just a dumb coincidental mistake.
Yes. I would agree with you. And let this be a lesson to Jim Peeler for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Get better with your investigation.
I bet it was. Because they were probably thinking, like, there's no way this info's getting into the Branch Davidians. It's cool to tell a mailman. you can talk to your teacher, your doctor, your clergyman, or mailman, and it's safe.
Is that a real...
Not the mailman.
Oh.
And I doubt the others now, too. But,
okay. Yeah, no, I'm with you. It was really dumb. So we're going to cross the news truck off.
Okay.
Now, media leak, Cal, he really, I think he deserves to stay on for a little while.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Because.
And just to clarify, Cal Ludke was a longtime member of the McLennan County Sheriff's Office who was assigned to support the ATF's raid preparation team. So he himself was not a member of the ATF.
Right. He's county sheriff's office.
And what did he do exactly?
Allegedly leaked to the media that the raid was happening.
Oh, okay. I see. Oh, yeah. That's... Oof.
That's bad.
Yeah, that's not good. But again,
we don't know if he was told to.
True.
And he vehemently denied the charge.
And he's probably thinking, because their power's been cut off, that they don't have a way to hear, but that's not true. They must have had like battery powered shortwave radios and stuff.
Well, but the power didn't get turned off till after.
Okay, then
the
yeah,
first
then bad Cal, bad Cal,
bad Cal.
Yeah,
but again, we don't know if he was told to. There's just not enough evidence that we can feel good about pointing a finger at him.
Okay, right.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna cross him off the list.
This is tough.
So now we got Sarabin.
And he's the one that said, we're going to go ahead with the raid anyway, even though Rodriguez is like, don't do it.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's bad.
You got to trust your employees.
Yeah, right.
Trust them to do their job.
Yeah, right.
But at the same time, be a good leader.
Yeah, he was neither. I don't know.
What are we going to do? Janet Reno? Cult members? This...
I guess maybe cult members and Janet Reno would be next to go off for me.
Well, because I guess Janet Reno isn't so involved in the handling of the raid.
Yeah.
She could have been easily manipulated by ATF.
And she's a little removed. Although, didn't she end up actually on the ground there at one point? Or am I making that up?
Oh, I don't know.
I forget.
Like if she went to go visit the...
Did a walkthrough.
The officers during the siege.
So you're David, huh? I'm ready to take the cult members off. I don't think they should be absolved of full guilt. But in the end, they were victims to a maniac and should have known better. But I don't think that they would have wanted or meant for this to happen.
I don't know. No. I mean, I agree, but they literally saw it happening. They could have run out of the fire.
They stayed with it till the end. I know. God.
And they if you're a parent and you're seeing you're going into a bunker, a concrete bunker where you know you're going to die, you're like shepherding your baby along.
I don't know, but they cult members get brainwashed, and it's something that happens over time. And he probably preyed on specific types of people. I just think cult members are culpable, but at the same time, they're basically hostages.
And they're also thinking like, we die, we get a great reward. So they've got it wrong on all accounts, I think. But
right.
But they think they're doing the right thing.
The misinformation they're being fed.
Yeah.
Is more to blame.
The difference is, I think that the cult members actually believe that there's an altruistic reason for doing all this. If I had to bet, I would say David Koresh knows better and is just a raging narcissist,
right,
or at least is in denial, but that's happening because he wants this attention so badly. It's all for him.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm fully convinced now and I feel comfortable.
Good. Would you consider joining our cult?
Depends. Okay. So Janet Reno, how do we feel about this? I mean, she's up top.
I know. I just don't know enough about... I mean, she was the one that's basically like, we're doing it, getting it done.
Yeah, we're going to do it today. Well, we can skip. We can talk about ATF or Saravan.
So how is ATF separate from Janet Reno? Because isn't she the one... Oh, the FBI goes in the end?
FBI... ATF is doing the investigation beforehand. Oh. And they call in the FBI to help them.
Oh, then I'm ready to take them off. I think they probably had the best intentions.
FBI?
No, ATF.
ATF.
Yeah.
They're the ones who are investigating the ammunition and the guns.
Yeah, they were probably doing the right thing, right?
That's true. And FBI is the one who kind of like takes over the siege.
Okay, yeah. I'm ready to say goodbye.
But again, ATF is the one who needs the funding.
All right. Well, still.
I mean, there's a world where we put FBI and ATF together because they're working together. It's not one or the other.
Yeah, and since we don't really have a name for any of those things besides Sarabin and Janet Reno, and we've got them on the list, I think the ATF generally and the FBI generally are a bunch of people risking their lives for the most part and trying to do good in this sense. They were trying their best to do it without casualties, I think.
So are we going to cross them off the board?
I will if you will.
I will too, because I got my eye on Sarabin, baby.
Oh, yeah.
He is dirty in my eyes.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'd put him above Janet Reno too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to cross off Janet Reno.
I think
he doesn't have the, Sarabin doesn't have the power to make the actual call.
Uh-huh.
I think Janet Reno does, but he's the one on the field.
Yeah.
He's the one who's close to the action, and Janet Reno is trusting that Sarabin is doing his job.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I'm crossing Janet and her peacocks out.
Okay.
So now we just have David Koresh and Sarabin.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't know what to do.
Really? For me, it's no contest.
No contest.
No. None of this would have happened at the end of the day without Koresh. Sarabin wouldn't have made the bad mistake. He wouldn't have been put in that position. It sounds like he didn't make the right call, Sarabin. But David Koresh continually manipulated, serially abused underage girls and kept those people in a sort of hostage situation that made them burn alive and
could
do mass suicide, it sounds like.
He was the one calling the shots inside.
And he made it all happen. He built that whole thing from the ground up.
I mean, what do you think about this? We could blame David Koresh and give a slap on the wrist to Sarabin.
Yeah, I mean, I'd even go a little tougher, like, you're fired, Sarabin.
You're firing him.
I think that's a pretty... Or you're
or maybe,
bucked down or demoted.
Maybe put him on house arrest.
Okay. Or you know what? You get a desk job, Sarabin. Probably already was a desk job. Put him on a beat again. He has to be the mailman.
Oh.
Since that guy probably lost his job.
Well, I think he died.
I know.
That guy died.
Yeah. Sarabin, get out your dog spray and put on your little shorts with the stripe down the middle. You're delivering boxes.
So it's settled.
Okay. Is that okay with you?
Yeah. David Koresh is going to the alarmist jail. So, I mean, this is this didn't have the twist that we sometimes have, but he is just such a despicable human being.
Yeah.
That it feels satisfying.
I agree. I would be unsatisfied if it wasn't him, I think, because he was such a bad guy.
Yeah.
Good singer. Not so good on knowing when to cut it short, but...
Well, thank you for joining us today. What a treat.
I love this podcast. Thank you so much.
After the Waco, a few survivors of the raid were tried in court. They were found not guilty of the murders of the ATF agents, but received lengthy jail sentences for their actions during and after the raid. The remaining survivors, some 25 in number, reorganized, published the writing of Koresh, and began the process of rebuilding the movement. By the end of the 1990s, it had more than doubled in size. Vote for who you think is to blame at thealarmistpodcast.com. And if you have any thoughts, comments, hesitations, we're thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week as we'll be discussing the Salem Witch Trials. Ooh, spooky Halloween!
Erios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.